Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current Online. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
And good Saturday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in to Catch My Drift here at Wham! Talk 1600. And joining me in studio, we have special guest Ken McGee, running for Washtenaw County Sheriff. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
I'm glad to have you on, man. It's great. Last time we talked, you and I went and had lunch together. And I got to say, your qualifications are outstanding. And we're going to get to those in a few minutes. Let me take care of a little business first and get us off the road here. What we do every week on The Drift is go over the news we put on The Daily Drift, www.thedailydrift.com. And if you haven't been there, go to it. It's the news you need to know. Our sponsor this half hour will be Burroughs Roadhouse in Brighton, West Brighton, 5311 Brighton Road, 810-227-6000. That's 810-227-6000. If you haven't been to Burroughs, they've got the greatest atmosphere. It's really a big history to that building. They do some great comedy shows in August, the 21st and 22nd. They've got Matt Holt, and the 28th and 29th, they've got Nathan Timmel. So you can go to burrows-roadhouse.com or call them 810-227-6000. Great coupons in the Current. Go to currentonline.com and check them out, 810-227-6000. Okay, so, Ken.
Yes, sir.
Former DEA agent, which is just astounding. When I look at your resume, it's like something out of a movie. It really is. You want to talk a little bit about, let's start at the beginning, how you got into law enforcement.
Kenny McGee, born and raised in Ann Arbor, Michigan, had some great mentors in my life as well. Ended up going up to Michigan State, graduated first in my class, got my master's degree there, started my career in Jackson, Michigan as a patrol officer. Worked my way over to the Drug Enforcement Administration undercover in Detroit. Fortunate enough to be involved in, I was the undercover agent in the largest drug deal in the history of Michigan, where we see 600 kilograms of cocaine. Got a promotion, went to Bogota, Colombia. Had 7 years of experience in Bogota, Colombia. Recently, the series Netflix, a lot of people asked me about. I was on a team that was responsible for the takedown of Pablo Escobar while I worked in Bogota, Colombia.
Narcos? That one?
Narcos.
Narcos,
yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yep. So I was. Narcos is kind of a docudrama, so there's some fact and fiction in there, but I was right in the thick of things in that entire investigation. Was promoted again, worked my way to various places within the United States. Proud to say that while I was in Colombia, I also arrested an FBI top 10 fugitive, a crooked police officer. I arrested another guy that kidnapped and shot two agents in the head. And I also, later on, I worked at the Olympics as an agent. I was next to the bomb when it blew up in Atlanta. And testified against Eric Rudolph, the Olympic Park bomber, after that. So all of these experiences are wonderful when it comes to law enforcement, but I'm also very much of a cerebral thinker. And I look at today's day and age, to be an effective law enforcement leader, you have to have the ability to think outside the
box.
And that's what you say. I say, as a law enforcement leader, think outside the badge. Meaning, maintain those traditional law enforcement values that you have, but you have to think differently because society looks at you differently as law enforcement. And so if you have the ability to think outside the badge, think differently, and understand how society perceives you in today's day and age, you'll be a much more effective leader. That was a phrase that I coined. I'm very proud of it because it's the idea of bringing in other disciplines into the law enforcement field to ultimately make society a safer and better place to live.
Yeah, because being a cop isn't just giving tickets and arresting people. It's investigation as well. But you also have to put yourself, a good cop anyways, will put himself in the shoes of the criminal or the victim and put a little compassion into it. To be a really good, effective cop, you have to be compassionate, right?
Absolutely. And I, again, had some great mentors when I was a kid. I got in trouble periodically, and some police officers understood that. They said they saw the good in me, and they put me on the right track. And I've used a lot of those skill sets to get me to where I'm at today and to understand that there are bad people out there that are criminals, and there are good people out there that commit crimes, and they have reasons why they've committed crimes, and you have to understand why. So my point being is, lock up criminals. but try and work with people that are in situations where they may have committed crimes or made mistakes and work with them, once again, to make society a safer and better place to live.
Yeah, and let's look at heroin. How many deaths in the last year alone?
In last year, there were 49 deaths in Washtenaw County. In the last 18 months, I think we're up to 83 deaths.
83 deaths from heroin
and opiate-related deaths in Washtenaw County.
Okay.
It is a huge epidemic. If you added up every way that people have died in Washtenaw County that was accidental, you would come nowhere near close to that number.
Right.
And we'll throw in suicide as well. Nowhere near close to accidental deaths, drownings, accidents, car accidents, electrocutions, and suicide. Nothing would compare to that number. It is a huge epidemic where people have lost sons and daughters, brothers and sisters, and mothers and fathers. It's incredible how much of an impact that it's having in this community. And I have a plan to attack that problem.
Right. Because it's no longer, you know, people want to say, oh, it's not a problem for us. It's an inner city problem. It's not. This is the suburbs, right? We've got kids and people, adults, dying in the suburbs.
Well, that's exactly correct when it comes. We've always had drug problems in society. But right now, the drug problems have escalated to where people are absolutely just dropping dead. Now, when we've had problems in other areas besides the suburbs, dedicated men and women of law enforcement have tackled those problems. And we've had numerous community programs that are out there fighting that problem as well. But it's been elevated to a new level, not just on a national front where over 147 people die a day around the United States of heroin. It's been elevated to the level of people understanding that drug addiction is an illness. And I'm a firm believer in this. We need to lock up drug dealers. There's no question about it. But we need to treat drug addicts as the sick people they are.
Okay. Now, let me ask you, a lot of these deaths from heroin lately have also been because of they're mixing the fentanyl or the elephant tranquilizers and stuff. And that's really what's kind of throwing them for the loop, right? So these people might think they're just buying regular heroin, but it's been contaminated with a tranquilizer, an animal tranquilizer of some sort?
Chemically generated opiates, basically, is what we're looking at here, is what you're talking about. And heroin in and of itself, when it's being dealt on the street, it's not a prescription market where you're getting the exact quantity and you know what you're getting. You might get 1%, 2% heroin, or 3%. If accidentally somebody mixed up some heroin and gave you 5%, you're going to die. Now, with that being said, when you mix the fentanyl or some of the other chemicals that are opiate-driven or the animal tranquilizers, then you have another major problem on your hands. There are numerous communities where sometimes 15, 16 people have died over the weekend. And I'm not saying that has happened in this community yet, but it could. And basically what that is a bad dose of heroin getting out there on the streets that several drug addicts have tried and they die from it. So it's a huge problem. And part of it is also generated by the problem with prescription drugs. In the United States alone right now, the United States issues prescriptions for more painkillers than the rest of the world combined.
Wow.
Annually.
Wow, that's amazing.
So there's a huge educational process that's going on with doctors as well as pharmacies and people that are in pain. And there are people that definitely need painkillers every single day of their lives. But there are other people that don't, or other people that become addicted to them when they did need them. And then there's a continued use of the prescription drugs. And how are a lot of people dropping dead? Because the regulations on prescription drugs have been coming so strong in certain areas that if somebody cannot get a prescription drug and they still have that addiction, their body is craving that feeling of euphoria that heroin or opiate substances give you, they go out and they buy heroin. And they're used to taking prescription drugs and they try heroin and it kills them. And I will tell you this, Gary, I lost a brother to a heroin overdose and that's exactly what happened to him. He was addicted to heroin. And then years later, he got addicted to painkillers after surgery, and he was addicted for many years, couldn't get painkillers, and he went out and scored some heroin the first time he had tried it in 20 years, and it killed him.
Ugh. So literally, anytime, and if you are one of those heroin users, anytime you take a hit of heroin, you're really playing Russian roulette, aren't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. You're putting a needle in your veins and injecting a substance in that you have no idea what you're putting into you.
Yeah, that's amazing. So parents, if you have prescription drugs at home, lock them up. Keep them away from your kids, obviously. If you're coming out of the hospital or you're getting off painkillers, seek some help. Don't let yourself get addicted. If you are addicted, there's no shame. Tell your doctor, I'm addicted, and get into a program, right?
Absolutely. There's a there's a saying, drug prevention starts in the medicine cabinet, meaning if you've got prescription drugs in your medicine cabinet, get rid of them. And I've got ideas on how you can get rid of them. You can turn them over to the police and various law enforcement agencies. I know Saline, for example, Police Department and Pittsfield Township have got a drop box where you can put prescription drugs in and they get destroyed appropriately.
Yeah, and don't flush them down the toilet.
Absolutely. Don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah.
But definitely lock them up. Keep them away from your teens and your loved ones.
Right. Okay, so let's do this. I want to talk about PETER, which is your acronym for your drug prevention program. Let's start with P for PETER.
Exactly. Well, basically, when I analyze things, again, this is thinking outside the badge. How are you going to attack the drug problem that we have? And it is definitely a heroin epidemic, but my philosophy can also spin into several different areas when it comes to substance abuse and chemical dependency. And we have to understand something, Gary. The majority of crime in society can be traced back to substance abuse and drugs and chemical dependency. You might be locked up for committing a crime that wasn't drug-related, but why did you commit that crime? You were either high on drugs, or you were trying to get money to pay for drugs, or you were trying to get money to do something else because you couldn't hold a job because you were substance abuse or a drug addict. So, PETER. PETER is an acronym that stands for Prevention, Enforcement, Treatment, Education, and Recovery. So briefly, I will say this. You can go to my website, and for your viewing audiences, my last name is spelled M-A-G-E-E, and my Facebook page is Ken McGee for Sheriff, and it gets into more details on this, as well as an article that was published in the Courant. You can find it in a September issue of the Courant online. So let's talk about those areas briefly. P for prevention. To prevent youth from even being involved in narcotics use in the first place. The old adage, parents are the anti-drug, that's true. The idea, just say no, that's true. But to get people involved, young people involved in interest, things that are interesting to prevent them from ever being involved in drug use in the first place. Then we have E for enforcement. And I'm not just talking about law enforcement. Sometimes law enforcement is the catalyst for people to get into some sort of counseling or treatment. But enforcement of family values, enforcement of peer-to-peer pressure groups where you say, stay away from drugs, you know, let's not do it. So we have enforcement that covers two different areas, societal as well as law enforcement.
That's also on the parents' end. So it's not just the law community we're talking about. It's the parents enforcing some values at home.
Absolutely. And when your kid says it's only marijuana, that's when you need to have a serious conversation with them.
Right.
Or everybody does it. You need to have that conversation. Then we move into T. So we've got prevention, enforcement, and now treatment. When enforcement and prevention fail, we need to get treatment. We need to start looking at drug addicts as sick people and getting the treatment that they need. And if I'm elected sheriff, I will take part of the jail and turn it into a treatment and recovery center. No question about it. Then we have the second E, which stands for education. Education is educating the people as to what the problems are in society. That's different than prevention. It's educating, like you and I talking about it. It's letting the people know that 82 people have died in the last 18 months here, and that these are nameless souls, and we have a huge problem that impacts all of us, whether you knew those people who died or not. Some way or another, you may have been related to criminal activity involved in those circles.
Yeah, I mean, that 82 people, that's 164 parents, right, who've lost a child, and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and grandparents.
Absolutely. So when you talk about the education, for example, if the local commissioners want to cut a budget here or cut a budget there, they have to look at the substance abuse issue as the area that impacts the community literally the most. And then, for example, my opponent does not even have anyone assigned to the local narcotics enforcement agency. The education of why it's so important for law enforcement to have a multi-dimensional task force all working together is so important. And I will ensure that that gets done. I will have somebody at our narcotics enforcement agency, a local team, to be able to understand the fact that we've got to lock up drug dealers, as well as understanding the reason you have to have a task force is because drug dealers do not encompass geographical boundaries as just their area.
Right.
And that's why we have to work together. And then finally, you have R, which stands for recovery. Recovery is a lifelong process. And employers need to know that. Drug addicts know it. People in recovery know it. But employers need to know it. Family members need to know it. And insurance companies need to know it. People, everybody needs to understand that a person in recovery, it's a lifelong challenge for them every day. There are some wonderful people out there that are in recovery that have done an incredible job and still go to AA meetings after 30 years of being drug or alcohol free. And so that's the bottom line. Prevention, enforcement, treatment, education, and recovery.
Right. And a big part of what's happening in the Sheriff Department as it stands today without you is the fact that if a drug addict gets thrown into the jail, he stole something, and so that's what ends up getting him to jail. But he's not receiving treatment in the prison, right, or in the jail.
There are some programs that are in the jail, but in my opinion, it is a programs set up to appease people but not treat people in its entirety. Meaning, it's not a 24-hour cycle program.
Right.
It's not a major, major issue where you're directing it straight towards the person, where it becomes part of their lifestyle during the time that they're in a correctional in the correctional institution. It's an AA meeting here and there. It's meeting with someone here and there, whereas I'd like to create, and I will create, and I have a plan for it, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation that works with people who are in serious need of treatment to help facilitate the road into recovery when they get on the outside.
Right, because if we don't get them into a treatment and recovery, the recidivism rate is just huge, right? They're going to be back.
Under the current administration at the Sheriff's Department, they've gone from a recidivism rate from 59% to 64%. For your listening audience, recidivism is a fancy textbook word for people who reoccurring offenders who get locked up again for committing more crimes. So absolutely, it continues to increase, and we're not going to stop the revolving door of recidivism and relapsation without treating these individuals. That is the root of almost all problems we have in society when it comes to crime, is people commit crimes when they're addicted to drugs.
Yeah, so that's huge, and I hope people really understand this. When I first made contact with you and heard this, I actually found you on YouTube, I think, was the first time that I saw something, wasn't it?
Right. There's a Ken McGee for Sheriff YouTube where it's a 4-minute video that I talk exactly about what you spoke about.
Yep. And for the record, that's McGee, M-A-G-E-E, for the number 4, sheriff.com. McGee for Sheriff. That's the number 4, McGee4Sheriff.com. And that's a great, go see those videos, folks. I'm telling you, they're awesome. Spread them around on Facebook. Spread them around on Twitter. Get people out there to see that video. It'll only take you a couple minutes, and it's very, very eye-opening.
I answer all my emails. I answer all my Facebook messages. I'm looking for people to continue to support me, whether it be if you believe in my message and you want to put yard signs out or invest in my campaign. I'm looking for any assistance I can. I've got a great group of people working with me already. But what we need to have here is a revolution when it comes to treatment of these individuals.
Right.
We stop that problem, our community will be even more safe, better place to live, and families will thrive and it's so painfully obvious to me what I'm saying, but I just wish I could get other political leaders to embrace exactly what I'm saying and other law enforcement leaders to embrace exactly what I'm saying, because I know that is the right way.
Right. Now, what intrigues me or makes me – I look at you and you are a strong law and order candidate. I mean, I don't know if we covered it. You were police chief for U of M as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
How long was that?
2 years, and I was an executive with the DEA for over 10 years. And totally, there's about 33 years in law enforcement. But a lot of that time, not only was locking up bad guys, but I spent a lot of volunteer time working in drug treatment and recovery efforts in regards to serving on nonprofit boards. I'm a firm believer in giving back to the community. That's the way I was raised.
Right.
And, you know, there's so many things as a law enforcement leader you can do once you get in that position. You just have to have the passion, the energy, the drive, and most importantly, the proactive vision. And this problem with the heroin epidemic didn't happen overnight. I'm wondering where law enforcement leaders were several years ago when they could see it creeping up and creeping up, and where the community leaders were. I saw it happening. Other people saw it happening, but I think people have been asleep at the wheel, and I'll come right out and say it. I would have done things a lot different. You need to be a proactive leader, and that's part of thinking outside the badge, envisioning and seeing problems before they become epidemics.
Right. Well, man, I got to say I've loved having you in today. Or maybe I don't know if I'll have time to get you in again before the election comes, but you are like the Superman cop because you've got that law and order, and if you look at Ken McGee, you'll say, he's a hardcore guy. You've got the compassion, which we don't see or even expect anymore in our police. When we see so much anti-police stuff going on in this country, it bothers me that, you know what, cops are people too. And many of them, like you, have the compassion. You actually care. This is not just a job for you. This is something that the passion just comes out of you like cologne. It's huge.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I was raised, my parents were very good. And my mom always taught me to be humble. But my campaign manager says I have to speak about myself. And my mom and I laugh about that to this day. She's 90 years old and is always giving me advice. And having said that, it is a passion. And I will put it in another perspective. As I said to you earlier, I lost a brother to a drug overdose. My passion in making this community safer, also I want to put my money where my mouth is. And I would like your reading and listening audience to spread this word. If I'm elected sheriff, I won't take a salary the first year. The $122,000 salary that comes along with being the sheriff, to me, will not go into my pocket. It will go into drug treatment organizations such as Dawn Farm or Home of New Vision. They do great jobs in the community. Both of those agencies are nonprofit. If you're looking to leave an agency in your will to bequeath money to, or looking if you win a lottery and you want to give money to an agency, look at Dawn Farm. Look at Home of New Vision. Those are the kind of organizations that are making change and putting people's lives in the right direction. And if I'm elected sheriff, I will not take a salary the first year. I will dedicate that money towards drug treatment and prevention in this community. That's how serious and how passionate I am. And I greatly appreciate you recognizing my passion.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so I want to put a call out there to our business people who support this station, who support our programming here. You know what? Get hold of Ken. Let's get some money into his election fund so we can get, I'd like to see a back page of the Ann Arbor Sunday paper or something. Because you know what? I think if people see you, hear you, read you, they will vote for you. Because it's common sense, it's compassion, and it's law and order, all in one super package. And that's why, you know, I've really been a big supporter since the moment I first saw you on YouTube.
I've never understood why the sheriff's race has to be a partisan race. I've never understood why you have to divide things into Republican and Democrat.
Right.
And recently I sent out an advertisement, and the majority of my campaign has been self-funded. I have had some people invest in me, and I'm very appreciative of that. And all their names can be found on my campaign finance records that I file quarterly. But I've never understood why people divide things up into party lines. Because at the end of the day, it's about fairness, equality, and making the world a safer place to live. And in my most recent flyer that I sent out to many residents throughout the city of Ann Arbor, I urged them to consider crossing party lines. Because after 49 people died last year and 83 people in the last 18 months, it's unacceptable. There's got to be a different strategy. And I urge them to understand that they have the power to save lives. So I urge certain people who are out there to consider crossing party lines because they can help save lives.
That's right.
And that is my not only my promise, it's my dedication to duty that I promise everyone. That's what I'll be focused on.
Right. All right, so folks, that's McGee, M-A-G-E-E, 4, the number 4, McGee4Sheriff.com, okay?
And the Facebook page is Ken McGee for Sheriff. And a majority of this conversation has dealt with the heroin issue, which is a major, major priority. But I would like to sum up that I see other issues in our community that I will tackle as well. I want to continue with embracing certain communities to make sure that people understand the role of the police officer. I want to take a look at human trafficking and several other issues that make the world a better place,
okay,
even cyclists on the road. So I thank you so very much.
Okay.
I greatly appreciate your time today.
You got it. Thanks, Ken, and I appreciate you working so hard. We'll see all of you on the other side of the break. Take care. Good job.
People are always on the move, driving to work, hauling the kids to practice. How do they keep up to date? They listen to Wham Talk 1600 just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham Radio for intelligent conversation with hosts like Joe Pags, Glenn Beck, Theron X, and Dana Lesh. And they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 today and advertise your business on Wham Talk 1600 and whamradio.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Donald Trump leveling a new accusation against his opponent, suggesting Hillary Clinton may have been on drugs during their last debate.
I think she's actually getting pumped up. If you want to know the truth, she's getting pumped up. You understand.
Telling the crowd in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, that they should both be drug tested ahead of their next and final debate. Hillary Clinton prepping for that face-off on Wednesday, which will be moderated by Fox's Chris Wallace right now.
Clinton is not taking any questions from any real journalists, only doing friendly interviews like the one she did with Ellen DeGeneres yesterday.
Fox's Jennifer Griffin and some workers moving from the bottling line to the picket line at two Jim Beam distilleries in Kentucky, where more than 200 union workers walked off the job today. Company saying that contingency plans will keep operations running to maintain the flow to distributors and consumers. Fox News, we report, you decide.
This is Mark with Ashelman Equipment. Need help with your property maintenance? Ashelman Equipment has LS tractor loaders ready to go. Power steering and hydro transmissions make driving fun and easy for the whole family. Want to stay out of the weather? Cab tractors with heat and AC in stock. Buckets, forks, snow blades are changed with just a pull of a lever. LS Tractor is the highest quality tractor in the U.S. and number one in customer satisfaction. Awarded by EDA for 2015 and again in 2016. Highest quality, more features standard, 5-year warranty, free loader, and 1.59% financing qualifying. Ashelman Equipment in Whitmore Lake is at exit 50 on US 23, just north of Ann Arbor. Call 734-994-6000. That's 734-994-6000.
Do you still believe in the Golden Rule? Then you must feel surrounded by a world that doesn't seem to care about it at all. You've heard about wise guys on Wall Street who rigged the system to make sure that part-timers don't have a chance. The politicians who write laws they'll never follow themselves. And the spin doctors they hire to hide their true intentions from the people. Even in your own town and neighborhood, you've seen people turn their backs on each other, close their hearts, and mute their conscience. When free people know the right choice but refuse to make it, we give up on each other, and we give up on our freedom, too. That's what makes good guys so special. They will never give up. We are the 5 million men and women of the National Rifle Association of America, and we still believe in the Golden Rule. Join us today.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome back. Thank you for tuning in to Catch My Drift. And what we do every Saturday is go over the news of the week and have guests coming in. But let's take care of a little business. Our sponsor this half hour is Wellbridge of Pinckney. They just had an open house this week at their Pinckney location. You can reach them at 517-375-5363. That's Wellbridge of Pinckney. And they're located on Howell Street, South Howell Street in Pinckney, 734-954-6700 is the other line you can reach in that. 734-954-6700. They specialize in post-acute rehabilitation and nursing care. They are designed to provide a bridge of recovery to wellness. So check them out at thewellbridgegroup.com. Okay, so we're going to talk about news of the week, but we've got a guest calling in, and it's 7th District Congressman Tim Walberg. Tim, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Maybe they can be a bridge to healing for our country, too.
Don't we need some, Tim? Don't we really need some?
We do. We really do. And it's a shame that in a time when This administration touted the fact that they would be the great unifier. We've had nothing but disunity develop in this country. And that comes from principles that have never worked before in this country that this administration has attempted to foist on America. And to some success, he has. And yet it's brought about a great divisiveness. It's brought about great uncertainty about our economic future, about our security around the globe, and the fact that a number of worldwide toughs have inserted themselves into power positions again, to the point that we even are talking now about the resurgence of a Cold War. And that's not what should be happening. And I know that you and probably most of your listeners agree.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to Hillary's reset? I mean, that's got to be the worst reset in history, wouldn't you say, Tim?
Yeah, I tell you, when I press a reset button, it generally works, whether it's on my computer or on a circuit breaker or something like that. But this has not happened. It's just gotten worse and worse. And for those people that think that Putin desires Trump over Hillary, I don't know where they get that, because, frankly, at the very least, he has to be very uncertain about our nominee and what he will or won't do. Putin already knows what Hillary, I guess, doesn't do.
Yeah, well here's one of the things that aggravates me, Tim. The Uranium One deal. I can't seem to get Fox News, ABC, NBC, CBS, or anyone else seems to be covering the Uranium One deal. I mean, Hillary Clinton sold, what was it, 20% of our uranium reserves here in this country to a Russian company?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, you look at the other deals that she embarked upon, and the amount of cash payoffs that she and her husband received that is now coming out in WikiLeaks. And it is too bad that both the so-called mainstream media and even Fox spend more time talking about the salacious things going on. And you and I both will not defend the indefensible. But we also know that in this case, we are selecting a president who is going to be the seat filler and be useful as a tool for reconstructing America or further destroying America. And I think that's where the media ought to be talking about the issues that really impact, whether it be the Supreme Court, defense policy, homeland security, or pure, unadulterated economic spending policy.
Yeah. Well, let me ask this, Tim, before we get on to some of these deeper weeds that we're going to dig through here, I want to clear the air, because you're in a race for the 7th District, and there have been accusations leveled at you that you are Mr. Giveaway when it comes to domestic or plans for trade. And you are not for TPP. Is that correct?
That's true. It is true that I am a fair and free trader. When you have the consumer base outside of our country that makes up 95% of the consumer base in the world, for us to cut out that consumer base and just stay home is asinine. We have to trade, and more importantly, we have to be the leaders in trade. I've been working yesterday and will continue this next week trying to get some type of arrangement from Customs and Border Patrol that won't stand in the way of something that Ford Motor Company wants to do in sending thousands upon thousands of vehicles in containers on ships going up the St. Lawrence Seaway from the Port of Monroe in my district over to Germany. That's the direction we want to go, and if we do proper trade deals, we can do it. So while I was supportive of trade deals like Korea, which frankly was supported by almost everybody and has turned out exceedingly good, not only was it Republicans and Chamber of Commerce's and Farm Bureaus that supported it, but it was also Hillary Clinton, now vice presidential candidate Kaine. Barack Obama signed it. Debbie Stabenow, Carl Levin supported it, and UAW supported it, along with the Manufacturers Association. So my district said that was a good deal, and it's turned out to be a good deal. On TPP, I said, and you and I talked about this before, and I appreciate a chance to review it, but I said I'm going to look seriously at TPP. We need to negotiate a deal with the Trans-Pacific Partnership where we're the top dog. I think most of the countries want us to be there as opposed to Japan. And yet it has to deal with several things. One, I said, even though China isn't in this TPP agreement, we still have to put, I believe, currency considerations in all of our trade deals, because we've seen what currency manipulation has taken place from China, and we got to make sure that we let the entire world know that we're not going to accept that. Secondly, we have to have alterations in the tariffs and the taxes that other companies or countries are putting on us, so that it's a true, fair, and free trade situation. We need to make sure the manufacturing interests are taken care of, and we need to make sure that things like pharmaceuticals and the agriculture. Well, as far as I can tell, after reading a good section of the 5,000 pages of TPP that's been online because of TPA, the Trade Promotion Authority, which set a framework in place that said, yes, Mr. President, your administration, you are the responsible party for negotiating a trade deal. We're not going to have 535 members of government negotiating it. But once you negotiate it, and we trust negotiate it well, then you bring it to us 90 days before you're going to put it forward for approval or disapproval. And 60 days of that time period, it must be available online for not only Congress to read, but for citizens to read. So it's not another situation like you got to pass it before you can find out what's in it, Nancy Pelosi said. So TPA allowed us to do that, and I think because of it, TPP isn't moving forward.
Well, that's good.
Both Democrats and Republicans have seen it didn't do anything on tariffs in any significant fashion or unfair taxation or on currency. It helped our agriculture, but our manufacturing interest, pharmaceuticals, weren't helped. So, no, I'm opposed to it, and any information that comes out from my opponent in the campaign that indicates that I have is absolutely, let's say it nicely, it's inaccurate.
Good. Yeah, it's aggravating to see it, and she's been working hard thumping that lie on you, and it is very aggravating. So I'm glad we got a chance to put that out there. But let me ask you. So WikiLeaks, we're seeing just tons of John Podesta's emails from the Hillary Clinton campaign falling out. Is Congress going to be able to look at any of these and say, you know what? Because it looks the things I'm seeing on Twitter, I'm not seeing the news coverage, you know, at Fox News, ABC News. None of them are looking at these. But people on Twitter are going and they're literally reading these emails and pulling things out one at a time. And I'm not seeing the media do anything with it. Is Congress going to take a look at some of these emails being exposed and say, aha, here's something that Trey Gowdy should be looking at, or aha, here's something Jason Chaffetz should be looking at? Is Congress taking a look, or is somebody there, is there a committee that's looking at these WikiLeaks emails to see if it helped in any of these other investigations where we're not getting any answers at all?
Well, there will be. And talking with Jason Chaffetz, in fact, just after we adjourned for the October campaign period, there have been a request for information, if necessary, subpoenas, and then ultimately in the Oversight Government Reform Committee, in which I sit and Jason Chaffetz chairs, has already stated that we'll be looking at it. Now, we have to be in the majority to do that. So that's where we're fighting hard in the election to make sure that the Republicans still at least control the House so we can at least have these oversight hearings. I can't speak for Trey Gowdy, but I'm sure it grates his gizzard right now, and old expression, to see this lady who basically defies any sort of propriety, decency, or law-mindedness by what she does, and with impunity, it goes in violation of laws if it doesn't. It doesn't have any bearing on her. And so, when you look at these WikiLeaks and you see how long this has been going on, and the efforts to undermine, undercut anything that we would look at as fair-minded campaign tactics, as well as propriety and doing what you should be doing as a public servant, and the deals made with foreign countries, bad actors. It's amazing that this is going on, but now it's come to light, and sadly, there's too much emphasis being given to the Republican nominee for things that none of us will defend.
Yeah, they're spending more time on gossip and rumors and what somebody said 11 years ago. Well, you know what? Enough of the garbage. I'm not asking anyone to defend it. I would say most men and even some women talk dirty when they think they're off camera anyways. But what's probably more important is the fact that here's all kinds of factual substance against Hillary Clinton, and it's not being talked about, for crying out loud. This is the issue, that this woman shows herself as a criminal, shows herself as unethical, and the media is so biased they won't talk about it.
you know, stop and think about it. When you have Carlos Slim, richest man in the world from Mexico, who is the largest stockholder or shareholder in the New York Times, that starts to show something as to why Trump is being hit in every way, shape, or form, and Clinton with all of this stuff that amounts to illegalities, not just indecencies, but illegalities. And, in fact, direct opposition to what America is all about, they won't say anything. In fact, they go just the other direction of defending her. And that's why when you don't have a fair and free press that's out there in the national scene at the very least, and to a great degree even on the state and local scene, you've got problems because the people will have to respond to what they hear. And it can either be on the Internet, which isn't always true, and it can be on the mainstream media, which is seldom true. So you've got a problem going on, and that's why your listeners, my constituents all across the 7th District, have to take a look and say, what are we going to do here? We're not going to be able to elect the perfect person, never have. So which one will move us forward and back to those foundational principles at the very least, or give those of us in Congress that will work in an ally fashion to move back toward limited government, liberty and justice for all, not just a few, and that we all have to live by the same rules and laws as everybody else. If we go that direction, I think we'll see a rebound of this great country.
Great. Well, for those people who came in late, we're talking to 7th District Congressman from Michigan, Tim Walberg. And Tim, I want you to say hello to Ken McGee, who's running for sheriff here. I think you've met Ken before.
I met Ken. It looks like a Navy SEAL or an Army Ranger.
He's hardcore, man. Yeah, he's hardcore.
He has six-pack where it's supposed to be, unlike mine. Mine's dropped a little bit.
Well, thank you for the kind words.
And looks like he has an agenda move forward to do the law-abiding thing and to make sure that those of us who are law-abiding citizens, we abide by the rules, we love the Second Amendment, and we play by the rules with the Second Amendment, and the other things that there in Washtenaw County will have a sheriff that will not only support freedom and liberty and justice for all, but also make sure it's the criminals that have to bear the results of their labors.
Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it, and I concur with everything you said about me, and look forward to serving the people of Washtenaw County.
Cool. Well, so Tim, let me ask you. We got to approach this ugly elephant that's sitting in the room, and you kind of opened my eyes because you're privy to some information. You had a conference call with Paul Ryan, and a lot of my listeners, a lot of my Twitter followers, very angry with Paul Ryan because they think that Paul Ryan has kind of dumped Trump and is not supporting him. Can you tell us a little bit about that conversation you guys had in that big conference call?
Yeah, it's a shame that we still have moles within our conference, and these are members. It's not highly unlikely that one of them gave the password and the phone number for the conference call to somebody else, potentially media person, and all they had to do is put in the password and then give that member's name, and the person taking the call would not have known any difference on that. So I was seeing information come out from our conference call before we were totally finished with it, and it wasn't fully accurate. All Paul said was, guys, after the last weekend, when all of that came up, and in my district, I had to do what I had to do about campaigning, but I want you to know that I am not unendorsing Donald Trump. He says I am supporting him, and I will be voting for him. I can't defend some of the things that he says that are indefensible, but he is our candidate, and we have to get him elected. He says, but I also understand that some of you are in very, very different situations. And in your districts, he may be hurting you, and some of yours he may be helping you. So all I'm saying to you is do what is necessary for you to come back, because if we don't have a House Republican to hold back the tide, if indeed it goes the wrong way and Hillary Clinton is elected. And so that's what he said, and then he went on to say, and so for that reason, because I'm Speaker of the House, and my responsibility is to make sure that we stay in a majority, I'm going to be spending all my time campaigning for you. Now, I tell people, if you were a head of a business, if you owned a business, and you saw something going wrong, and you had a bunch of other things you could be doing with charities and community projects that you've been involved with, but until you could fix and repair and make solid again your particular business, you would probably step back from all of the other issues and go on just with your own company. That's all Paul was doing. And it's a shame that it was reported, sadly, by media trying to disrupt the Republicans, divide us still further. But I'm not sure how Paul could have said it any different to us. In fact, he said, folks, I've come to understand that there's someone in our group, maybe several, that like to put out our information that should be kept as a family talking behind closed doors. And so it may get out, but I got to talk to you. We have to understand where we're coming from. And sadly, that's what took place and got a lot of people up in upheaval over Paul and this situation. And frankly, and I hope I don't offend the people, but I'm going to tell it as it is. I think Paul has done a great job in trying to uphold the Article I powers of Congress and also work with Donald Trump. And up until at least last week, he had told us he had been either meeting with or phone call with Donald Trump every 10 days at minimum, and felt that they were moving along on the policy issues very well. So it's one of those things that the Democrats know how, and the media, sadly, know how to get us into a family battle that ends up really splitting up the larger population of liberty-minded Americans that are out there that just want to see America become great again. And that's why they've moved over toward Donald Trump, because at the very least they think he wants America to be great. And Paul, I think, wants to help him, but it's difficult when these type of misconceptions develop.
Yeah, well, part of it is the fact that I think even some of our politicians are looking at these polls. Now, when Real Clear Politics put out their average of the polls, nobody is looking at the makeup of the participants in those polls, and they're all being heavily – I've seen them. I'm watching them. They're being heavily weighted Democrat, 3 points, 7 points, 15 points in some cases. So, of course, those polls are going to show Hillary Clinton. I think that's part of the bought, rigged – if you want to use that term, rigged media – yeah, who are trying their best to push Hillary in there because they're scared to death, I think, of Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump is something new. It's something abrasive. And the fact, I think, that he goes directly to the people, bypassing the media a lot of times, is what's scaring the media to the point that, hey, we may not be the strength and the power he used to be as the media if this guy can get in there and talk to the people without him. Because on social media, I'm seeing everything for Trump. When I look around, not only here in Michigan, I've spent a lot of time in Florida this year, I'm not seeing Hillary signs. I'm seeing Trump signs everywhere I go. When I talk to people, I'm not seeing people talk about Hillary. So I think, you know, Paul Ryan and the rest of the Republicans who are a little worried about Trump and any down ballot effect it may have, I don't think it's really there, because I think people are on board the Trump train. I'm feeling more positive, Tim. You know, 3-4 months ago, maybe not. But right now, I am feeling so positive that Donald Trump is going to pull this out. I hope Paul's ready to work with him, because you know what? I think he's going to be our next president of the United States of America.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, and I hope the same. And that's why I continue to support Trump. But let me give you an inside story on that as well. When we do our polling, like I do in my district, it is often different than what we see from the national media polling. Because we're paying for polls that will really tell us the story, even if it tells us a bad story. And I have a pollster that has never been wrong, even when I lost in 2008. Sadly, he was dead on. And I believe he's still dead on in my race, and I'm very encouraged because of that. But I also know that other candidates do the same thing with pollsters that are telling them behind the scenes where they're at. And it's generally weighted a little bit more pessimistic than optimistic. And so we keep battling, but very realistic. And so that's what Paul's dealing with. For the most part, you're right, Gary. Thus far, our interior tracking polls in this district show Donald Trump leading. In the 7 counties in my district, he is leading, some more than others. But in other parts of the country, that isn't the case. And we've seen a little slippage for the first time in the last 2 weeks on some of our candidates, because as Paul had told us on several occasions, as well as our NRCC chair, Congressman Walden from Oregon, at that point, we weren't seeing Trump have any real impact one way or another on down ticket. In the last 2 weeks, we've seen several races in the United States that are targeted races, there has been a impact from some of the most recent things. And that's where they've got to watch. I know one of my colleagues chose to go away from Trump, and I think he's been hurt now. And I know another one of my colleagues who chose ultimately to go away from Trump just recently, and that slowed down his decline a bit. So that's what all Paul was saying. You've got to do what you've got to do in your district, and you better know what your district is and what will work best. In mine, it's just right for me to stay where I'm at right now and keep pushing forward and hopefully help Trump in my district, even as I help myself to expand the lead if that's further possible in this race.
Good. Well, Tim, before we go, let's get one last thing. So we've got a lame duck session coming up, whether Trump is elected or whether Hillary is elected. Do we need to be worried about anything happening untoward in the lame duck session?
Oh, man, you sure do, especially regulatory-wise. They have begun to open the floodgates to complete regulations that have been in the pipeline, some of which I've been pushing back on from my committee chairmanship or subcommittee chairmanship position on key regulatory issues for the past almost 6 years. And now they're coming to fruition, fall protection that I've been pushing back on that's going to end up hurting people out in the field, construction workers, et cetera, because it's a one-size-fits-all. The mandatory overtime provision for regulation for salaried employees bumped up over double the income rate from what it was. We all said it needed to be increased, but to double it is going to put people out of jobs, going to take their salaried positions away as well. And entities like University of Michigan have already said because of that rule, it's going to cost a 4% increase in tuition for their students to carry that on, and then certain nonprofits and human service providers, Easter Steels being one of those, it's going to cost them jobs and the ability to provide counseling services in a reasonable fashion, et cetera. So that type of thing is going forward. And we've joint employer, and I just go down the line with stuff I think they're going to push on, and that's why I introduced legislation called the Midnight Rule that would keep any regulation from being initiated or consummated during the lame duck period of time, because the people have spoken, it's time to wait for the next president to embark upon regulatory issues. So that's going to be there. As far as TPP, Paul Ryan has already said that that's not going to be taken up. So that's not a concern, at least I don't see it at this time. Other issues, as long as the Republicans control the House, I don't think the president is going to get anything through a law, but on the other side of the ledger, they're very difficult to think we can get it through the Senate and the president either.
Okay.
So hang on.
Well, great, Tim. Thank you so much for spending all the time with us today, and maybe we'll get you on again even before the election again.
That'd be good, and everybody vote.
Okay.
Can't stay away. You got to vote.
You got it. Thanks, Tim. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, until next week, go to thedailydrift.com. Get the news you need to know. See you next week.